Dennis Tito, the billionaire from California, had a big grin on his face, and he should, because the world's first space tourist has arrived on board the International Space Station.
What a dork.
This is the dork from space.
Great trip here, and I don't know about this adaptation that they talk about. I'm already adapted, so I love space.
I love space.
I love space.
Wow.
Oh, you...
I love space. 6.6 million a word.
I love space. You love space. I mean, come on.
Why is he a dork?
Well,
he spent $20 million?
$20 million to...
a six-day trip?
You know what? If that's what the best thing that you can do with your money, you have... It's like cocaine. It's a sign you have too much money when you have a coke habit. If you have a space habit, it's also a sign you have too much money.
Space Jones. And
I mean, you know, think about all the poor, starving children in Appalachia, right here in this country. And, you know,
yeah,
that's a little too self-serving.
He's got two sons. I think they're probably late teens, early 20s. And
they are pissed.
They
really?
Saying,
my parents,
man.
Man,
is this your
yeah, that's right.
My parents did $20 million. You want to see stars? I'll show you stars, butthole.
Quick, hit dad over the head.
Exactly. They were asking him if it was his midlife crisis thing. But
could you just get a hooker in a Ferrari like everybody else's dad? $20 million?
Well, I saw a picture of his girlfriend, and I don't know if that's what she is, but boy, he's
already got the hooker.
Yeah, he spent something to get her.
Lady,
yeah, she
is. Really?
For an old bald guy like that, she's a blonde bombshell.
Well, you know, old bald guys get them. I don't know why. What is it? Do you have a thing for bald men?
Well, Captain Picard is a hottie.
See? That's it, right there.
Is that what it is? Picard syndrome?
But it's more than his.
Well, it started
his
with Telly Savalas. I mean, it started.
Yul Brynner, King
with
and
Yul
I.
Yul Brynner.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some reason, women are attracted. I think it's because bald men look rich. I don't know why.
Daddy Warbucks syndrome.
Is that
started
it?
Started Little Orphan Annie. Daddy Warbucks, bald guy with bucks.
Yeah, I don't know why. Do bald people generally have more money?
Well, I don't know if there's been any research on that.
The thought is that, you know what my grandpa used to say, and it's an old saying, you could probably guess. He used to say, grass don't grow on a busy street.
That's it.
And so the idea was if you were bald, you have brains. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's...
Lots of brains. In fact, so many brains, there was no room for hair. It's like the brains were going, move. We got brain work to do here.
Well, that's kind of an extension of the old Cro-Magnon, hairy ape man kind of.
Right. In other words,
yep.
If you're a hairy man,
right,
you're kind of dumb.
One brow, you know.
One eyebrow,
mm-hmm.
Chest like Planet of the Apes.
Right.
Yeah.
And who is the bald one on the show?
Oh, that would be our producer, Mike Jones, who disproves the wealth theory right there.
But the brain thing, he's kind
he's
of got
lots
going
of brains
there, yeah.
In there.
Oh, he's very brainy. Very organized,
yeah,
too.
He might have something there.
But do you ever fantasize about a bald man?
I can't really say that I have.
Ever?
Well, I mean, you know, Picardi's, and he's a hottie. He's
right.
About the only one. Yul Brynner was a
so
little...
So if you weren't married to Andy and Captain Picard, you met him in a bar,
mm-hmm.
Bing, first
and he
night,
was,
he'd
he
have
was,
you.
He was 20 years younger.
No. You're not getting away with that. No, right away, right now. With your age spread.
I would enjoy a nice dinner with him.
We'd have a cocktail together.
We'd have a cocktail.
Number one, back to my cabin.
Make it so.
Make it so hard.
And he'd be, but see, you're not even accounting for the fact that he'd be working you, Gallucci. He'd get you in.
Would you like to boldly go where no woman's gone before?
Actually.
I know, I'm
no
to...
woman from this planet.
From this planet.
So far.
No, pink woman with only two breasts. But I'm willing to lower myself for you, Gallucci. Space girl, Gallucci.
And I'd be lucky.
Yeah. Mm. So you'd be more attracted to him. This is a great question for women. Which starship captain do you want to do? You'd be more attracted to him than the one who was the skank, Captain Kirk.
James T. Skank?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Kirk was always a bit of a...
He was overdone. He was
overdone.
Glad you know you want it. You've seen what I can do to women.
And but, you know, they were all... It's like he was like Clinton. They were always very ugly women from a very bad planet.
Yeah.
Want to see me lift a large styrofoam rock over my head to show you how strong I am? Quick, Spa, cut my shirt open quickly.
I thought Scotty was kind of cute, too.
Before he started drinking excessively and gained 80 pounds?
Exactly.
Gained 80
days.
Pounds in a week.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Anyway.
Is James Doohan still alive?
Oh, yeah. He's still got it.
He just had a baby a year ago.
He's still going. I mean, he's
Dilithium crystals are working. Loaded and ready for action.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
President Bush marking his first 100 days in office. During that time, he's had to deal with the China spy plane standoff, and he's, of course, faced criticism for his standoff or his stance on the environment. Majority of Americans, however, say they are happy with the leader, and he's more than happy to laugh at some of the comments which made him the butt of jokes during his campaign.
And I actually said this. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. Now that makes you stop and think.
That's sweet.
Isn't that funny?
You know what Bush does? He does this thing. It's a Southern thing, Joe. You've probably seen this before. He's dumb like a fox. He's aw shucks, gosh shucks, while he's manipulating his long-term strategy. Or as he says, strategery.
Strategery.
Yeah.
Long-term exactly. Strategery.
He's actually digging it that people think that he's stupid.
He's pretty good at that.
Yeah. Right. In fact, at one point, one of his aides came to him and said, well, how do you feel about people thinking that Dick Cheney is like the prime minister? He said, well, good. That gives me twice as much clout.
Nice. Very nice.
That's good. Well, there's a book out already about the president's first days in office. It's called My First Presidentiary.
Is it a pop-up book?
It's a cartoon. Yeah. It's written in Crayola.
Clintons, it would be. Hey, there's a our guest is on the phone, Maura. Can we sidestep for just a moment?
Absolutely.
Most people think that lying is something just about every politician on the planet does. I wondered if there was any doubt at all, but yes, of course it is. In Missouri, there's a politician who says he doesn't lie. He also says he wants to send lying politicians to jail. Missouri State Representative Craig Hosmer has proposed a bill that would make lying in a political campaign a crime. Craig, are you there?
I am.
How are you doing?
Good.
You're a politician who doesn't lie?
Well, I think the real question is whether or not...
Oh, wait a minute. Dodge that question.
I believe the question was, do you lie, sir?
I mean, I think everybody's probably told a falsehood, but the question is whether you do that in a political campaign and political advertisement.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
That's where, because I think it does a real disservice to the electorate.
Right.
They can't tell...
So you don't want to eliminate lying. You just want to set up a certain spot for it and a certain penalty if you... It's like the NBA with a foul, you know. You can jab somebody.
You can hand check all you want.
Like the NBA. No.
Yeah.
But what we want to do is to make sure that people, you know, make sure that they have their facts correct when they make some statement in political advertisement.
Uh-huh. Have you been the victim of a really bad political lie?
No. I think generally, you know, I think you've made the statement that you think most politicians lie. I probably disagree with that. I think most politicians, you know, at least most people in their advertisements are truthful. But there are some people.
Well, what's your definition of truthful?
Well, again, it's the way that it's written in the statute is knowingly tell a falsehood in a political advertisement.
Once you put the word knowingly, have you ever been an attorney? Most politicians
have. I am
some
an attorney.
Okay. No. You know that once you put the word knowingly in there, it's impossible unless you cut someone's brain open and say, see there, there's the molecules to show they knew. Mm-hmm. How do you prove knowingly?
Well, I think it depends on the case, but if the person had the information that showed the information they were providing in the political advertisement was false, and I think sometimes that happens.
Right.
And you have some people that just tell, it becomes almost an issue of who can tell the most, the worst lie that's still believable. Because if it's totally unbelievable, people aren't going to give you much credibility.
Craig, are there no guidelines in place to keep that from happening now that we need this law?
Nothing in Missouri.
Wow.
Meaning you could say, my opponent had sex with a pig and put it in an ad. And, well, in Missouri, you know.
We have the pig right here.
People would be, I mean, you would not be able to be prosecuted for that?
No. And like I said, because, you know, some people equate, they always say there's a First Amendment protection to political speech.
Right.
And that's never been the case. The First Amendment protects opinion and it protects truth. It doesn't protect information that's basically, I mean, you could possibly.
Oh, and you could sue someone on that based on defamation.
A civil suit. But the problem is when you're in political life, you have to have actual malice, which is very difficult because you're a public figure.
I have no malice against this person. I just want to win the election.
And that's unfortunately what happens is it's who can tell the most believable untruth that, again, generates, you know, if you have to spend your time and energy refuting those
right.
with accusations.
Oh, that's the strategy that's involved. Well, now, you must have a few examples of lies that have been told that you know of that changed the course of history and were just blatantly bad.
Oh, I think if you watch any political campaign today, I mean, we had a U.S. Senate race that I'm sure both candidates, that if you look through the record, both candidates were telling, you know, falsehoods about the other.
Is this a specific one, or are you just saying all of them in general?
I think you'd have to generally go back through them, but there are votes about, we have a problem with methamphetamine in Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And there were accusations on both sides that they were not only soft on crime, but were trying to, you know, pass legislation that wasn't effective, that, you know, just things that were, and both parties do it, both Democrats and Republicans and Independents.
Well, but I mean, so far you haven't given me anything specific. Some good boner that was told about somebody that changed things. I mean, you could say someone's soft on crime, and there's no way to prove that's a lie, because what does soft on crime mean?
Sure.
It's linguistics.
Well, if you say, hey, this guy's a speed freak and he's got a meth lab, then that might be a little
stronger.
Yeah, little but
I mean, because as far as I know now, I can't think of any ads that are blatantly untrue. There's always a rationale for them. And I'd love to find from you just an example of an ad that wouldn't pass the test.
Well, I think, I mean, hypothetically, I mean, there's people that say, make accusations that someone's been convicted of a crime.
Uh-huh.
Or some, and the facts are just not there to support it. Again, I agree with the opinion.
Yeah. It's hard to enforce.
Cuffing, those type of things are going to be difficult to prosecute, because the prosecutor has to, you know, at least in Missouri, prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And
I can't imagine any case that I know of in which it would be prosecuted. Well, let me give you a specific one and ask you what you think. Maury, you remember this one, the famous governor of Massachusetts in a tank. Oh, no, not the one in the tank. The one where, what was his name? Willie Horton.
The revolving door.
The revolving door that said that Governor Michael Dukakis was sending criminals out on a 3-day pass.
Right.
Now, we all know that was blatantly untrue. Correct?
Correct.
But there was enough rationale there for it, that even under your law. Well, you tell me, under your idea of the law, would that have been illegal in Missouri?
Well, again, I don't know enough about the facts in Massachusetts, but if it was knowingly...
Good lawyer.
Yeah, you're a lawyer.
If I ever get busted for lying in the head, would you defend me?
There are two words that a lawyer will never say, yes and no.
Well, but there are different circumstances that you have to look at. But the problem is not that it necessarily... What we're hopeful with the legislation is that people will look at it and use it as a deterrent, because right now it doesn't seem like there's an internal barometer with a lot of politicians. They don't tell outlandish lies. They're little lies, because an outlandish lie isn't going to be something that the voters are going to believe.
Right.
And so what you do is you make those little lies, but the problem is those little lies sometimes are very, very effective.
Hmm.
And if they have an impact on the election, then who really loses?
I'm
the
curious.
Voters
to,
lose.
Excuse me, Craig. Are you?
Public
are you?
Service should be
hold on, Craig. Can you hear Maura?
Can you hear me?
Sorry, I didn't.
Maura, go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering. Are you expecting a lot of opposition to this? Because it comes to mind in the state of Washington, the Supreme Court of Washington actually ruled on a similar case like this that said lying in political ads amounts to puffery and is constitutional. So, are you familiar with other states' rulings on?
Well, I know
on
the federal the federal government is looking at this as well, and I know other states have looked at it. But I don't think, and again, I'm not taking issue with with your Supreme Court, but you know, the Constitution doesn't, at least our Constitution here in Missouri, our federal Constitution, I don't think protects false statements, knowingly false statements that are made wherever they're made.
Right.
Our First Amendment protects free speech, it protects opinion, and it protects true speech. It doesn't protect false statements.
Craig, what's the reaction so far?
Well, we passed it on the House floor. We sent the bill to the Senate,
where it will be butchered. I don't know. I mean, do you have an idea how it's going to go?
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to be something that's going to catch some some
opposition. But who wants to be the politician that votes against this, too? Yeah. Well, you don't want that on your record.
When Craig
campaigned... My opponent voted against truthful advertising.
My opponent voted to preserve his right to lie.
By the way, that's he perfect. Sleeps with donkeys.
Well, but, you know, you'd think that would be the case, but unfortunately, my guess is that the bill, it won't make it through the process.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm not saying that anyone has an interest in preserving lying, but the problem is some people want that option to go ahead and stretch the truth and make those statements and those allegations, because those things are, unfortunately, if you look at the national political campaigns or any other political campaigns, I'm sure similar out there.
Are you a Democrat or Republican?
I'm a Democrat.
How'd you feel about Billy Clinton?
Oh, I think there are a lot of things that he did were wrong. I think overall his presidency was effective.
Uh-huh.
Is lying?
I'm just waiting. I'm not even going to take him there.
Well, if you lie to the whole country, should that be punishable?
When
I'm
he
a
said,
supporter.
I did not have, you know, whatever.
Sure, and that, but again, that's already dealt with under, I mean, you know, he apparently.
I'm asking you how you felt. This is an emotional question, not a legal.
Well, I was very disappointed. Okay. I mean, I think when he made statements that he knew to be false under oath, and, you know, that's already dealt with perjury. Hmm. And I think there was an investigation and, you know, determination whether they were going to charge.
Hey, make Craig, charges. Are you a married man?
I am.
Could you sell that story at home if you had to?
No.
None of us.
We got a no out of him.
That's a direct answer from an attorney.
There you go. Wow, I got a no. Hey, thanks a lot, State Representative Craig Hosmer. And, Craig, good luck with that. We'll certainly follow it. Obviously, it's newsworthy.
I hope it goes.
All right, thanks.
Get rid of those negative attack ads.
Geez, it took about 5 minutes to tear that one down, huh?
Oh, poor guy. I never got to. Will anyone ever actually go to jail for this?
No. He said, well, we hope it'll act as more of a deterrent. And actually, for him, in a future campaign, he can say his opponent voted yes for lying.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just trying to table the argument, you know, to try to bring some attention to the whole issue of dishonest ad campaigns, which is admirable.
It's very nice.
It might be a total waste of
in other words,
taxpayer time
he's trying
and dollars.
To raise awareness.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
Which is what the guy was doing with that goat. Trying to raise awareness of goat impropriety.
Right. Oh, I was telling you about George Bush and his way of speaking. There's a name for it now. It's called Bushonics. Have you heard that yet?
Uh-uh.
Not only is he taking responsibility for it, but I mean, there are writers and folks that are chronicling the way he speaks. It's not completely uncommon. Other people do it too. There was a story about it last week in the movie, in the magazine, the online magazine Salon, salon.com. It's a fictional story about someone who's upset that their son is speaking in Bushonics.
Okay.
Can I hear a little of it?
I'd love to.
Okay. The day Lisa Shaw's son, Tyler, came home from school with tears streaming down his cheeks, his mom, the 34-year-old Crawford, Texas homemaker, knew things had gone too far. All of Tyler's varying and sundry friends were making fun of the way he talked, she said. I'm not a revengeful person, but I couldn't let this behaviorism slip into acceptability. This is not the way America is about. You following it so far? That's Bushonics.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
She's speaking Bushonics. Shaw and her son are two of a surprising number of Americans who speak a form of non-standard English that has been labeled Bushonics in honor of its most famous speaker, President George Bush. The most striking features of Bushonics, tangled syntax, mispronunciations, run-on sentences, misplaced modifiers, and a wanton disregard for subject-verb agreement are generally considered to be bad by linguists. But that attitude may be changing. Bushonic speakers, emboldened by the Bush presidency, are beginning to make their voices heard. Lisa Shaw has formed a support group for local speakers of the dialect, and is demanding that her son's school offer a full-blown-up apologism. A growing number of linguists argue that Bushonics isn't a collection of language mistakes, but rather a well-formed linguistic system with its own lexical, phonological, and syntactic patterns. These people are greatly misunderestimated, says University of Texas linguistics professor James Bundy, himself a Bushonic speaker. They're not lacking in intelligence facilities by any stretch of the mind. They just have a different way of speechifying. Their numbers are legionary. We feel a good deal less aloneness now, my guess is what you would want to call it. It just goes to show the living proof that expectations rise above that which is expected. Thomas Gale, a speech professor, says, I'm sorry, but these people just don't know how to talk. I understand Bushonics. I was one. But under full analyzation, it's really just an excuse to stay stupider. Everything's going right for Bush so far. Just when you need a family member to help take away the spotlight on some of your awkwardness, why not get your teenage daughter drunk and get her busted?
Oh, she didn't.
President Bush's daughter, you didn't hear this.
This has been buried. I'm surprised it's not a bigger news story, to be honest with you.
Well, Jenna is 19.
What, is there anywhere the drinking age is still 18? She's underage drinking if she got busted.
Yeah, she was busted for alcohol possession by a minor.
Friday night, family tradition.
Yes. And what do you expect? Your dad's president. It's Friday night.
You know who my dad is. He can't bust me.
I don't know if she puked. The ticket was issued by Austin police who were checking for minors in possession of alcohol at nightclubs along the city's popular East 6th Street. Officers questioned Bush. She's a freshman at the University of Texas.
Who are you?
Young Jenna.
Oh, man, that's good. Come on, girl. You know what to do. Come on, little Jenna girl. Come on, baby. Come on, do another tequila shot. Come on, girl.
Can you imagine going out with the president's daughter? I mean, you know, Jenna's pretty good looking.
She's not a bad looking girl.
No.
She takes after her mom.
It's not a Chelsea kind of a thing.
Mm-mm.
Although I'm sure Chelsea has, you know, no problems either. But Chelsea's better looking than she used to be.
Yeah, she blossomed up pretty good.
Yeah.
She was not an attractive teenager.
No. Anyway, Jenna was questioned, her and another woman that they believed also to be under the age of 21, about 1:30 in the morning. Now, I thought she was arrested. I don't know what the difference is. Does anybody know the difference between being arrested and being cited?
Just like if you were to get a speeding ticket, you're cited. You're not arrested. She was cited for minor in possession of alcohol. That's not a jailable offense. She didn't get hauled in for it, but she got a citation for it.
So it's like a ticket. In other words, you got to go into the magistrate and argue that you weren't that drunk?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
Jenna Bush was drinking beer. They didn't say what kind. That's important to know. I mean, if you're a beer and you want a free celebrity sponsor.
All of a sudden, Jenna Bush getting cases of Coors Light to her door.
Would have been Coors down there? What's the most popular?
Lone Star.
Lone Star?
Yes,
okay.
Sure. Or Lone Star Light for you fat chicks.
Assistant Police Chief Mike McDonald. We should call the police department and just say we're from the beer company and we want to find out what kind of beer. Was it Lone Star? Here's what happens to you in Texas. Not much, by the way. She wasn't driving, so...
Good for her.
That's important to know. She would be, you know, backseat material at that point, but not in the front seat. She faces a possible $200 fine or community service. By the way, and they throw this in at the last sentence of the story, they say that two Secret Service agents had accompanied Jenna Bush to the bar, but waited outside. A 19-year-old charge was inside drinking.
Oh.
They go everywhere she goes. I mean, she's stuck with these guys for the next 4 years.
I'm sure she is, but not these two particular guys, because tomorrow's story is two former Secret Service
these
agents.
Guys are so fired.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, you gotta keep a better... You got to keep a better eye on the president.
I'm just going in to use the bathroom.
Well, a lot of states, you can go into a bar, but you can't drink as an underage person. Now, I don't know about Texas, how old you have to be to get into a bar.
She's just going in for some chili cheese fries, sir. She says she won't be drinking anything.
Yeah. Do they watch her that well when she's in a car with some guy? I see your head. No, I don't see it anymore.
They're gone again.
There it is
again.
Her head's
back up and get her gone again.
Come on.
At some point, she's kind of their boss, too. They have to accommodate her. She's the president's daughter. You want to get really fired, you make her mad.
Mm. Boy, that's a no-win situation, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you ever date a famous or rich young woman? No?
No.
No. None of us have we?
How about cute? Anybody ever date a cute girl? Anyone? Anyone?
No.
No. Never close to famous or rich, I don't think.
I dated a circus girl once.
Was she one of them bendable?
Yeah, one of those
stretch girls.
Just the get on the rope and twirl.
Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow, my stock went through the roof when that one happened.
But so never a politician's
never
daughter.
Never anybody famous or rich. No.
We have a situation at my house now. My son is 18, and he is dating the most attractive 18-year-old girl any of us have ever seen. I mean, even my wife is like, holy smolies.
Hell him.
I mean, the other day, it's an odd conversation to have in your house. But Lisa said, whew, look at the breasts on her.
Wow.
I mean, she really did.
Even
I didn't,
wife noticed.
Well, I didn't bring it up.
Oh,
I've been averting my eyes for weeks. And I was like, really, honey? Oh, yeah, I guess you're
well,
right.
I hadn't noticed by rule of law.
And she's 18, and you know what? They're Britney breasts. And so Lisa and I said, well, no, she couldn't have had that done.
They're that good? You think they're fake?
Wow. They're that good that you don't know.
Wow.
Which means if they're fake, they weren't the, you know, Better Call Mako kind.
Right,
they weren't the
quality.
Drive-through. They would be very expensive. So they're probably not fake.
At 18, you got to hope they're not fake.
Where did he find her at?
Just at school.
Really?
He's dating the most attractive woman in school.
And he doesn't play football or anything.
No, he's a nerd.
Wow.
Go figure.
Hey, girls these days are smart.
Yeah.
They don't want a football player. He can only make $300,000 a year as a second lineman for the Lions.
His back will be sore when he's 35.
Right, but as a geek, potential for millions.
So that's a big thing at our house right now.
Couple of big things.
My wife is paying more attention than I am, honestly.
Well, your wife's admitting to paying more attention than you are.
No, well, I'm not. I mean, I can't even think. You know what's really bugging me, actually, all right, now that I'm going to confess? And this goes against the grain of how I was raised. It goes against the grain of everything. But I'm sitting there rooting for him. You know what I mean?
What do you mean goes against the grain? You're supposed to.
No, I'm supposed to get put, son.
Deflower that girl, boy.
Wait,
get in there,
no.
Son. Have an oyster. Get in there.
I know.
20 minutes, are you nuts? Get back in there.
No. No, no, no.
I'd be outside the car with a bullhorn.
Stroke it. Come on, boy.
No.
No?
That's not the way I was raised, you know. And so I'm... At the one point I'm having these discussions about how you be responsible and be respectful and, you know, remember that good things in life are worth waiting for. And the other part of me remembers me at that age. And I'm just going, uh-oh.
Little devil on your shoulder.
Get her. Come on, boy. You know what to do. Get in there.
I think they're fine. I think they've just had some light pecks on the cheek.
I hope not. I hope your boy's gotten a lot further than pecks on the cheek with the hottest woman in school.
Really?
Yeah.
But she seems very conservative, and she seems like she's not the, you know.
I'm not saying he should be.
She's not the loose type.
He's probably not deflowered her or anything, being a geek and all that. Football player would have had her already, but I'm sure he hasn't.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you know.
No, that doesn't seem very nice.
But I'm sure he's got a, you know, hand under the sweater.
Well.
You know.
I can't say as I'd have to really be too harsh and stern with it. Last week we spent some time on this, had a few callers talk to us about their experiences, but never really got the inside scoop. Saudi Arabia is continuing its ban on female drivers, and it's the only Persian Gulf state that bans women from driving. And it's tradition that women are, you know, they're veiled and they're all that other stuff too, and they can't drive. Which, I mean, you know, the obvious male joke about a ban on women drivers. Well, there you go. So finally, an idea that works.
It was so forward thinking.
but women, of course, you know, would probably like to drive. And we were wondering what would be the best way to find out about this, to get a little inside information. And Downtown Joe tracked down the names of some auto dealers in Saudi Arabia. Whereabouts exactly?
I believe one is in Riyadh, which is one of the big capitals of Saudi Arabia. There's a Lexus dealer there, and I figured if anybody could tell us a little about this, it'd be a car salesman, because you would think clearly the more people that can drive, the better it's going to be for them.
For the car salesman. They would likely be in favor of women drivers. Maybe not politically popular to do that. Never having called Saudi Arabia before, we don't know if we'll get someone that could speak English.
Not for sure, although a lot of people do speak English. There's a lot of English people over there.
We're talking to a car dealership in Saudi Arabia. Good morning, sir. Is this Eunice? Eunice. Is this a gal? Oh, it's a guy, Eunice. Hi, Eunice. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Very well. Thank you.
All right. You speak pretty good English.
Oh, yes, I do. I'm an Indian.
You are an Indian. Do you sell... What kind of cars do you sell there?
I sell Hyundai and also all different cars.
Hyundais.
Oh, yeah. We have those here, too.
Yeah, we're the main dealers of Hyundai, Korean cars.
See, now you guys pronounce it right. High and die. We don't.
Actually, Korean pronounce it Hyundai.
Uh-huh. But you know how we pronounce it here in the States?
Okay.
We call it Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Yeah, which is completely wrong, right?
Are those big sellers in Saudi Arabia for you, Eunice?
Well, not literally. We are the second or third largest.
So that's why you've got time to talk to us. You want to be number one.
He's like the Maytag repairman of car sales.
The Hyundai dealer.
All right. Now, the reason we're calling you, did Mike tell you why we're calling?
No.
Okay. The reason we're calling you is there's a news story over here that would affect your business. It says that Saudi Arabian women are fighting for their right to drive.
That's right.
The women. And we were surprised because, you know, we don't get out much and we're not all that educated. We were surprised that Saudi Arabian women still can't drive.
Can't or can't?
Can't. We were surprised.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Everyone's surprised. I mean, but it was in this country, there's so many strange things happening. The women are not allowed, and they wear a cloak here. They cover the... you know, hair from the top to bottom with this special black cord.
Right.
Which we call it as a abaya. And it's not only for Arabs here, and even for the expatriates. It's mandatory, even if it's a British or American, you have to wear the cloak.
Now, don't you wish, as a car salesman, that you could sell to women? Doesn't that cut out half your market?
Well, that's very true, but people own 3-4 cars in every home. I mean, I don't think it makes a big difference.
Wow.
It will be more difficult when you drive on the street.
He made a woman driver joke, and we got it all the way over
more
here.
Difficult.
Yeah. Now, are you married, Eunice?
No, I'm still young.
You're a single guy?
I'm just 23 years old.
23 years old, single? And how do you... How is dating women over there compared to here? I mean, well, you've never even been here. You've been to India.
A dream.
Huh?
Where no one does it.
Nobody dates over there?
No. A girlfriend's here.
You have a girlfriend?
No, I don't.
You don't. You want one bad, don't you?
Sorry?
You would like to have...
Why? You speak up.
Okay, you would like to have a girlfriend?
Well, everyone wants to have
absolutely.
Everyone. How do you meet women, Eunice?
Well, I don't meet them any.
You don't meet
you
them.
You don't. They're all covered up.
Wow.
What's the normal way that people would actually fall in love and get married, or are marriages arranged? See, I don't know anything about it over there.
Well, it's all most of the thing happened here by religion. They're very strict followers of Islam. They're very religious people. And then they follow all the rules of whatever it's written in the Quran and Hadith. Hadith is it's a deed which is done by the Prophet Muhammad.
Sounds like no nookie for Eunice.
Well, it's very unfortunate for me. That
very?
Yeah.
I found a better opportunity. That's why I'm working here.
Now, where else have you lived in...
way of living.
Eunice, where else have you lived on the world?
Well, I was born in India, and this is my first trip out of my country.
Okay.
And I visited Dubai
mm-hmm.
last December, which is in a neighboring country.
You speak impeccable English for never having been to a Western country of any sort.
Yeah, everyone's surprised.
Yes, that's very good. You were very talented at English.
Oh, thanks.
Does that ever get you to the ladies? Does that impress the women?
Well, I used to when I was in India.
Yeah.
But here, why bother?
Well, of course, you like the way I talk.
How does car selling work for you in Saudi Arabia, Eunice? Do you start out a little higher than what people might want to pay and then bargain with them, or?
Well, people buy cars, yeah, like a peanut.
It's like a peanut.
A big bargaining thing happens here, but, you know, it's very easy to own a vehicle in Saudi Arabia. And we can afford to have a big engine car. The fuel... it's very cheaper here.
Now, I would love to be able to figure out, but you probably don't know American currency. What does a gallon of gas cost in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I've been told it's about less than a dollar.
Less than a dollar a gallon U.S.
Or maybe $3,
No.
Well, maybe three. Somewhere between a dollar and three. See, you're my kind of salesman.
Well, he doesn't know. It's someone who had been to the U.S. would know. What the relative price
yeah.
is. And so now you said you have no girlfriend right now?
No, I don't.
You had one in the past?
Yes, I did.
In Saudi Arabia or back in India?
No, not in Saudi Arabia.
Not in Saudi Arabia.
It's very difficult thing.
It sounds like your prospects are not that good.
But prospects?
In other words, your chances of getting laid.
Of finding a woman.
Yeah.
Where do people go to find women? Is there a nightclub where you can go on a Friday night after work where there's dancing and stuff?
Well, to be honest with you, there's no movie theaters here either.
No movie theaters?
Forget about the club.
Forget about the club.
Or the bars.
Or the bars, man.
No movie theaters.
Oh, man.
What do you do when you're not selling Hyundais?
Well, I watch television.
Television? Do you get satellite TV?
Oh, you like United States programs.
Oh, good. Okay.
You do, yeah. You like you like Baywatch?
Yeah. I'm just
like
I'm just wondering where his release is for.
I know. I was going to ask.
I'm wondering, do they have do you get some dirty magazines or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult, but some people do, but I don't get them.
You don't. So you're just like a monk.
Eunuch.
Instead of Eunice, eunuch.
Well, everyone become a monk here.
Yeah. All right, Eunice. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to call us. In general, would you...
So can I know? Who am I calling?
This is... Who are we?
This is...
Rick Dees. No, it's Bob Rivers.
Big Dick.
Big Dick in the Nut Hut.
It's the name of the morning show. It's Bob Rivers with Spike O'Neill and Downtown Joe.
And we'd like to make you our Saudi Arabian correspondent, if you don't mind us keeping your number and checking in sometime when news breaks there.
Really?
Really. Absolutely. Yeah. This was just in the news. History was made this weekend as the first ever space tourist was blasted into orbit. California business tycoon Dennis Tito joined two Russian cosmonauts on a two-day flight on a Soyuz rocket. Now aboard the International Space Station. Tito is a former NASA engineer, and he spent $20 million for his six-day adventure aboard the space station. Do we have Tito live from space? Why, of course we do. Dennis Tito, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, hello, Earth.
Having fun up there, huh?
I'm having a blast. I love space.
You're on the International Space Station?
Yes, I am. I'm in the Russian section of the International Space Station.
How was the flight above the Soyuz rocket?
Well, it was good. It was what I expected. It would have been nice if I could have got a window seat for $20 million.
You didn't get it?
Yeah, I didn't know you had to call dibs. Next time, I guess I'll know that.
Yeah, next time. How are the other crew members treating you? I mean, you're the paying guest, but they're obviously trained their whole lives to be there. Is there any resentment?
I kind of expected that, but it hadn't been that way at all. Mm. It's really been great. These guys have treated me like one of the crew. That's what I asked for. It was just to be a normal, normal guy. So far, the atomic space wedgie was fun. The zero gravity swirly was a real hoot.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I hear. Everybody gets that. Buzz Aldrin got one. Everybody.
And what are your duties during the next 6 days?
Apparently not very much.
Not too much.
I'm told that I'm supposed to not touch anything. Just sit here. Don't move around too much. Don't get in the way. In fact, NASA is kind of angry that I'm here.
NASA is angry that you're there.
Yeah, they think I'll be a real hindrance to get any work done. And they've had me fitted with this ass sensor.
An ass sensor.
Yeah, apparently every time I stand up, that goes off. Okay, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, I'm back.
I thought the ass sensor was for something else. Speaking of that, when you're up there, how does the plumbing work?
Pretty good. They have this tube thingy that you have to fit to your posterior.
Really?
I kind of hope that for 20 minutes I get my own. But they got these panty wipe thingies, and apparently that's good enough.
That's it.
Yeah, the rest of the guys are happy with it.
You pass it around and you share it, huh?
Yeah, it's fun for me.
I understand you had to agree to pay for anything you break. That was actually a true quote.
Mm-hmm.
If you break it, you buy it.
Yeah.
On the station. Is there anything you could break there?
There's tons of things. No matter which way you go, if I were to lean over and touch it. I'm just showing up, guys. Hold on. Yeah, sorry.
All right.
Yeah, everything here is pretty. First off, it's a Russian space section, so
right.
It's all pretty breakable.
Now, everybody is sort of assuming it's just because you're a rich business tycoon, but do you have any other deeper meanings, deeper reasons for doing this and spending $20 million for a ride in space?
I've caught a lot of flack from people about the spending the $20 million, but it's my money. I earned it, sorta. Not commerce, but it's always been my dream going to space.
Sure.
And since I was a little kid, watching the cosmonauts and that Sputnik thingy go through the sky, I've always wanted to do this. And I'll do it again. In fact, I'm already planning another space trip when this one gets completed.
What, really?
Yeah. I'm going to try to get some different experiences, so I'm not going up with the Russians next time.
Who are you going up with next time?
Well, I found this ad in the paper. This woman says she'll help me explore Uranus for only $500 an hour.
Sure.
So I'm going to look into that when I get back.
Thank you very much, Tito.
Hey, no problem.
Have a good day.
I'm sorry.
All right. Where's Spike?
I think he stepped out. He should be back in here in a second.
Little trip to the space station.
New York Post is reporting that preparations are underway for next weekend's first round of T-ball on the South Lawn of the White House. 32 kids are going to gather for opening day. Bob Costas is going to be the announcer, and the Marine Band is going to play the national anthem. This is funny.
T-ball.
The White House made sure that the chalk used to mark the baselines is biodegradable.
Of course.
So it won't ruin the lawn.
And also make sure it's not snortable.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. President, that's not going to.
Did you read about? Did you read the Newsweek article about Bush that just came out yesterday?
I haven't seen it yet.
And about how he just refuses to play the, playing to the crowd game the way Clinton did. It's not his style, and he does certain things that his staff is just freaked about. For example, during the China crisis. At the height of the China crisis, he was supposed to throw out the first pitch at a baseball game.
Baltimore Orioles.
Okay.
Every year.
He was supposed to do that. No, was that during the China crisis?
Opening day. Right?
No, I think it was different.
Okay.
But anyway, he was supposed to throw out the first pitch. And he looked at videos of his dad throwing out a first pitch. And his dad had put the ball in the dirt. And so he didn't want that to happen. So he had them stake out the distance to the pitcher's mound on the White House lawn. And he went out and he practiced during this whole China crisis. And the aides were saying, Mr. President, maybe you ought to not be doing this.
Bad look, photo op.
Look at a map or something, maybe read a little bit about the problem.
That's a geography lesson.
Yeah, we do this in the basement.
Yeah, but he said, no, I'm doing this. And then the day of throwing out the pitch was a crucial one in the crisis. And his aides wanted him to cancel the game. And he said, heck no, I'm going to the game.
Was it the ballpark in Arlington, maybe? Is that? Because he used to be a former owner of the Rangers.
It's maybe in the story on MSNBC.
Was it in front of him?
No, he just wanted to do it. And, in the dirt.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How funny.
Of course it was in the dirt. But he said, and afterwards, he walked off, and he knew it was in the dirt. And when asked for a comment, he said, well, at least it had a little steam on it.
There you go.
Because apparently he felt he did better than his dad. But he doesn't, he plays the, unlike Dan Quayle, who was just like a deer in the headlights and sort of was kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Or at least didn't know how to acknowledge
it. He didn't use stupid to his advantage like Bush does.
Well, I mean, some of us are great speakers, some of us are not. He can't speak all that well. He uses this mangled English, but that has absolutely nothing to do. I mean, if that has nothing to do with what kind of a job he could do it as president. You know, like you all used to say about Clinton, you know, where the fact that he's lying through his teeth has nothing to do with what kind of
nothing
job
has,
he
has. Yeah. Nothing to do with the bearing. It's nothing to do with the job itself.
Right. And the fact that he's walking around with a sundial all day, that's
right,
not important.
His pants or his ankles. That's why the button's real close. You have to walk to it.
So he, in fact, has started making fun of his own words, and he says we're going to have a strategery session today.
And well, I give him credit.
Yeah.
He has taken the bull by the horns.
Self-deprecating and not playing the game. That's kind of charming. Nice to see. You see this? I guess this is just normal. Joe tells me it is anyway. The Pope is asking for clemency for Timothy McVeigh. Don't kill him.
It's part of your job description as Pope to always put out a plea to...
So they do that for anybody?
Yeah, they're opposed to the death penalty, and that's their way of reminding you of that.
Wow.
Except, you know, if you're going to crucify a savior, that's okay, but anything after that...
They didn't do it.
Well, it wasn't okay, Joe. It wasn't okay then, but they got a mileage out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. That one paid off, but okay. In general...
I was just so curious about that.
That's going to be a tough gig if you're the Pope.
I mean, look, I got to come out in support of this bastard who killed 300 people with the babies. How am I supposed to do that? Please don't kill Timothy McVeigh, because something they must have some good feature somewhere. I don't understand.
Well, they just don't believe an eye for an eye.
Life is sacred, even though this guy's an absolute piece of crap.
Exactly.
If you put them in a big cell with a black guy who likes tiny white butts, that would probably be he would live and be better punch.
Yeah. Okay. This is interesting. This gal is making a huge round ball out of women's bras. Why is she doing this?
In the name of art.
She's an artist.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's art?
Her name, you haven't seen it yet. Emily Duffy is in El Cerrito, California, 20 minutes east of San Francisco. You know. It's close to San Francisco.
Okay.
All right. Let's say hi to her right now and find out where she got the idea to use bras for art. Hello, Emily.
Hello. Good morning, Bob, Spike, and Joe.
She sounds nice.
She does.
She sounds hot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Are you wearing one right now?
Not yet. I'm in my PJs.
Ooh. Oh, buddy.
Could you describe those for us?
Before I tell you about the bra ball, I have to say that I didn't ever realize Marlon Brando played the Pope.
don't make me come over there and whack you a bra ball.
That was great.
Well, we everyone always tells us the Pope is Polish,
uh-huh.
But it just doesn't work Polish.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
Go to Italy and you start to sound like Italian. No,
all right. Isn't that odd? The Pope would pardon Timothy McVeigh?
Oh,
But he would probably be opposed to what this lady.
No, he would hate this bra ball. You're going to burn in hell.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't like the bra ball. It's true.
We're giving your place in heaven to Timothy McVeigh.
You know, it requires a very liberal-minded man to understand the bra ball.
Emily, how old are you?
I'm 43.
43.
believe it or not.
You sound really sweet and young.
I'm really sweet.
For the purposes of radio interviews, I think you should be 22.
You know, 43 is pretty great.
Actually, I like 43, too.
Yeah.
Isn't that like your peak or something supposed to be?
Oh, not even close.
Not even close. Emily's still charging up the hill.
Yes, I am.
Nice.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I have an art car, and a lot of the Seattle art car people have been sending me bras for my project.
Are you asking for bras?
Oh, yes.
From around the world?
Yes, and I've received them from Belgium and Spain and Australia. Mostly from the United States, though, and I've received over 6,000 bras since I sent out my email plea in January.
Have you received a bra from Las Vegas?
I have gotten some from Nevada, yes.
Okay, because you can ask for some now, and you can ask for Portland, Oregon, too.
Oh, I've gotten from both places already, yes. There are some art cars in Portland also.
Now, what do you exactly, explain this ball made out of bras.
Yes, well, it's a very complicated story, but a very simple sculpture. And the story, I can't even explain it in the time we have, so that's why I'll try. But first I want to say that I have a website that has the full story and some pictures of it, and it's at braball.com.
Braball.com.
Very easy.
You know, I actually stumbled on it. I've typed things like that in the web browser all the time just to see what's there.
Oh, I should have put a slash between those.
Bra-ball would be something else. Yeah.
But anyway, so basically, in a nutshell, what happened is I saw an ad in the San Francisco Chronicle that a male artist was giving away this giant collection of bras he had, and God knows why he had it. That's another story.
Right.
But he was giving
away. Well, I know
away.
Why he had it. God also knows.
Yeah.
God's going to punish him when they get there.
I'm not going to comment on that part. But so I was one of many artists who called and made a proposal. And he said he liked my idea the best, which was of a giant bra ball, and because I thought it would be funny. And then underneath the layers of the thing itself, you know, there are many layers of meaning for women who wear bras, and you know, the ponderousness of it. The thing weighs 450 pounds right now.
And do the bras get older as you go in the middle and more uncomfortable?
No, they're all uncomfortable. No, what goes in the middle is the people I know. And my own bras are at the center, and as the email spread across the world, the layers reach, you know, spread out
nice.
to people I don't know.
Do you have a size for this thing, Emily, where you say it's finished? Or
yes,
you,
I do. It's going to be 5'4", which is the height of the average American woman, and that's who's sending me the bras.
And it's going to be how wide?
5'4".
Oh, because it's a ball.
Circumference.
So it's going to be 5'4", the height of the average American woman,
correct.
And it's going to be 5'4" wide,
correct.
The height, the bra size of the average Barbie doll.
Correct.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, but when something's round, the height and the width are the same.
I know.
I
figured that out about halfway through the question.
Do you have a sanitation process for this before you put it on the ball?
No, I trust them. They're sending them very clean. Very clean. But I can tell who's a smoker, and I can tell who wears perfume.
She's sniffing the bras.
Nice. Yeah.
I like her even more.
I did receive one jock strap. A husband and wife couple, and most of the people sending me bras are artists because they're upset that what turned out is the man who was advertising for this bra thing, he actually, after promising me his bras for months, he decided to keep them himself and do my idea.
Oh,
that's what happened.
Stole your idea.
So that's why I sent out the email. And so, you know, everyone heard the story and got upset.
Is anybody doing the jockstrap thing yet?
People have suggested I do that, but one giant ball of underwear in a person's life is quite enough.
You know, I agree with that because I contemplated the jockstrap thing, but I'm doing something a little different.
What are you doing?
You just go right ahead.
What I'm doing is I'm constructing a penis of used foreskins. I'm contacting hospitals around the world to send me circumcised used foreskin.
Yeah.
And I'm going to create a male phallic symbol from used foreskin. Very symbolic. It's going to be an average of 11 inches long, which is the average, of course, average male size.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's going really well. It keeps drying out.
No, you know, I'm
problem.
Married. I know that's not the average size.
Well, your man's a little undersized, isn't he?
Emily. It's interesting. What's the website again? Braball.com?
Correct.
Make sure you spell it right, or, you know, the windows will keep popping
open. You could have fun with it, but you won't find the site.
All right. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Oh, boy.
Is that a government grant? Is there government money in this kind of art?
Actually, there is.
Yeah, there is.
There is a program, 1% for Art, where every big public building that's built has to spend 1% on artwork.
I bet you I can get a penis made of used foreskins off the
ground.
That's
going to be hard to get the material.
What do they do with it?
Well, they don't sit around going, is there any use for this?
Heard they make wallets out of it.
Yeah, yeah, and if you rub it, it becomes a suitcase. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's
an old joke. God. I'm sorry.
That's unbelievable. Only near San Francisco would you get a story like that.
And get it in the front of a pretty credible art gallery there in Oakland. Sitting right out front.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, you know why? I'll tell you why. That's totally selling out for an art gallery. It's just like the one in New York that put the dung on the Virgin Mary. You've got all these great paintings by masters.
Mm-hmm. That Monet's a real crowd pleaser.
But if you do something controversial, then we do an interview, the newspaper does, and then the high and stuffy people get all uptight about it.
That's not art. We've seen, I mean, these classics are not getting any kind of attention because the ball of urine is getting all the press.
And so, you know, they're doing it for the buck.
Right.
There's more bucks in bras than there is in actual real art these days. The Kentucky Derby is this weekend, and they'll be off. And that's about all I could do. I have no idea how those announcers talk the way they do, and you know, rattle off those horses' names so fast.
And they throw names in as they do this.
Right.
I can't do that either,
yeah.
Man.
What a skill! If I had that skill, how much money would I make? Well, let's ask one of the one of the top Hollywood stuntmen and great jockeys in the game, Galen Mitchell. Galen, how you doing?
Great.
Do you ever meet those announcers?
You bet.
Are they as whacked out as radio people?
Yeah, they all belong together, I think.
Yeah, we do.
And when you talk at 90 mile an hour for your career, when you turn the PA off, finals.
Hey, everybody, let's go get a beer.
You think of that? I don't know. I think it's
they
the opposite.
Save their
I think these guys go home to their wives, and their wives are just like, All right. Hey, your name is Booger. That's your nickname, Galen?
Yes, sir.
We met Booger a couple of years ago. You had a beautiful woman with you last time, right? Did you have a beautiful woman once?
Once or twice.
Yeah. That's jockeys, I'm telling you, there is something sexy about a jockey. I don't know what it is.
Chicks dig a guy who can use a riding crop proficiently, a lot of chicks.
Yeah.
The money probably, Joe's right, doesn't hurt a little bit.
You make good bucks, right?
Yeah, you can. It depends how good you're doing.
Right, if you're
I've
winning.
Done well the last couple of years.
All right, cool. You're one of the top guys at Emerald Downs. The top guy. Mm-hmm. At one of the country's nicest race facilities. And you also, because of your proximity to Hollywood, I would imagine, have been tapped to be a stuntman. You're in the new movie coming out, Planet of the Apes.
Correct. They've done a remake of Planet of the Apes, director Tim Burton. And it's go and see it this summer. It's supposed to come out in July.
Okay.
It's going to be wild. It's going to be a lot of action.
Now, Planet of the Apes, you're not an ape. You play an actual human in it, right?
Yes, I play a human kid. The character's name is Burn, and it was a lot of fun.
In the photos, he looks a lot like Dana Carvey, doesn't he? With that goofy little wig.
Yeah, the makeup that they've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look a little bit like you don't now.
Right.
Yeah. You just look like a short guy who rides a horse.
Well, that's pretty much how I got the job. I was down riding in a barrier at Bay Meadows, and I happened talking to my mother and said I'd kind of like a break because I worked pretty hard here last year at Emerald Downs, and I kind of wanted a break and a change of scenery. And about a week to the day later, she called me and told me this deal come up for Planet of the Apes. They was looking for someone 5 foot, could ride a horse, to double this kid who was 13 or 14 years old. And I says, well.
And that's the thing. You're playing like a 14-year-old. How old are you, really?
38.
Okay.
It's great.
That's
Hollywood. You're 38 and you could play a teenager, I'd try to get on that show, Boston Public, the one with all the cute high school chicks.
I'm the towel boy in the female shower.
Right, right. What is the hardest part about being a jockey? Staying on the horse? In the beginning, when you're first learning, what's the thing that's...
Probably I'm going to say is the gate. You know, learning to come out of that gate is it could, because that can more or less make you or break you. If you get out good, then you're going to have a good start. If you have trouble there, that's going to give everybody else pretty much a head start on you, you know. But I think that gate.
So, if you come out early, right?
You got the advantage on them, correct?
Yeah.
A lot of times those horses don't want to go into that gate, and there's a guy who gets on their rear and pushes them. Is that like the lowest guy on the
I think
them's
pole? The horses that are like they're married, you know, kind of like they don't want to go home.
The guy who pushes the horse's butt, is that an actual job?
Yes, yes it is. You know, they're the assistant starters out there. They get them pushed in there, and then they have to get up there and help you on the head.
What other unpleasant jobs are associated with horses?
Horses, they're not, they don't cooperate all the time, you know. They have their own mind, but you just have to be out there with them. You have to love the horses and love to be out there with them.
Well, he didn't answer the question, but I mean, is there a...
No, but a shoveler. Shrimp boy, yeah.
I mean, it's just like anything else. I don't think there's any...
You think it's all smells good? It's wonderful.
I mean,
you're wearing some right now.
I've been around them since I could walk, you know. So it's no biggie. You're around them that long. It's just you're immune to it or whatever. And it's just there's no bad parts out there for me.
Galen, does the smell of horse make you feel all good?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Explains why the big tall blonde isn't with him today. That was here last.
No,
night.
She gotta like it too.
I'm telling you.
Oh, you betcha. She's gotta ride that thing. Yeah. And what's her name? You have a lovely wife?
Yes, I do.
And her name is?
Denise.
Denise, yes. Very nice.
And I'm hoping she's the tall blonde you were here with last time, otherwise we've gotten you in a world of trouble.
I'll probably be bruised up tonight when we get home.
Okay.
She's a bit bigger than I am, so.
Now, on Planet of the Apes, can you? I know that you're not supposed to give the plot away. Could you give the plot away?
it's gonna be a lot of action, you know. It's gonna be I've seen the 1 and 2, and it's gonna be way more action than it.
Right, its times have changed.
Right, it's changed, and Tim Burton, the director, has done such a terrific job with this. You know, just go and see it, and I guarantee you'll enjoy it.
Must have been well paid. He gave us
completely.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, I heard now Burton is a great director. He's done some Batman.
Uh-huh.
He's done Nightmare Before Christmas, Edward Scissorhands. There was a problem when he took this job. Planet of the Apes, immediately you know it's a sequel, or a remake, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
They want to call it Edward Monkeyhands.
Edward Monkeyhands?
Yeah,
oh,
Burton
cool.
was real strong on it, but they decided to stick with a franchise of Planet of the Apes.
Well, that's more than we got out of Booger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Booger was paid highly. I have no money to answer this at all.
Booger, how is the racehorse business coast to coast these days? Kentucky Derby is this weekend. Is it a healthy sport right now? Things going well? We've seen this year, we've seen a brand new sport try and die on the vine with the XFL. What do you see for horse racing? Do you see it maybe there should be more televising of it, or
it's coming along just fine, I think. You know, I think state to state it's doing great, and it's picking up here in the Northwest itself. So, with the Kentucky Derby coming this weekend, it's doing well.
More on TV? Yes, no, maybe.
I'd like to see it more on TV. You know, just because there's.
What if they wrestled while on the horses?
Yeah, XFL style.
There you go. We get Vince McMahon, I guess, in the horse racing there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is just a thought. All right. Thanks a lot for being with us, folks. If you're ever there. Auburn, Washington, the Emerald Downs, you will find to be the finest race facility in the world. One of the best in the world, is it not?
Correct.
Absolutely.
Beautiful out there.
All right. Thank you very much. And by the way, if you're in Vegas, you can follow these races from the casinos. Can you bet from there?
You definitely can.
All right. And does any of that money go to Booger?
Not right now.
Well, keep trying. The first submarine in the world to sink an enemy ship was not German. It wasn't Japanese. It wasn't U.S. Army made. The H.L. Hunley, sailing under the Confederate flag, torpedoed the USS Housatonic in 1864. Shortly after the kill, the Hunley itself disappeared, never to be seen again until 1995. That's when the remains of the boat were found in the bottom of the Atlantic, just off Charleston, South Carolina. Now the work has begun to preserve this amazing submarine. Warren Lash is the president of Friends of the Hunley. What do you think? Is he going to be one of these museum-type folks?
I think he's going to be an old southern
guy.
That's what I think.
Let's see what he sounds like. Warren, hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for your interest in the Hunley. It's glad to be here.
There he is. You were right.
All right.
Southern boy.
No, Yankee.
Oh, you're like a New Yorker.
Son of a bitch.
I was born and raised in Ohio and lived in New York for 5 years in Michigan, moved down to Charleston in about 1996.
You know, this is just the kind of thing that catches our interest in most radio shows, especially humor, you know, morning-based shows. Wouldn't be doing this because it's a historical society preservation kind of a thing. But I'll tell you what. These were some scary rigs, and to be a Confederate submarine meant a lot at the time, right? They didn't have a lot of money.
Absolutely. The city of Charleston was undergoing a northern blockade, and it was basically a desperate time for Charleston, as it was for the Confederacy, and desperate times call for
desperate measures.
And the courage and bravery shown by these men to do what they did is just phenomenal. It's outstanding.
Right. Take us into the sub, if you will. I've seen a few pictures of things like this. They're, first off, not what you picture today as a submarine, which is like a floating, you know, condo underwater.
Exactly. Well, like you said before, we didn't recover the remains. We've recovered the entire submarine intact.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It
remains.
It was fully sedimented. It was crewed by 9 men, and it was fully sedimented, filled with sediment. Within the first 5 to 10 years, as determined by our scientific evaluation, and that creates an anaerobic environment, which means no oxygen, which means no fungi, algae, bacteria. So the preservation of the remains is just absolutely phenomenal.
When you say remains, are you saying that you're going to have a wake? Are they going to go, the captain looks pretty good?
We're going to have a wake. I'm talking about the human remains and all the other artifacts, with the exception of some of the textiles. We've been a little bit disappointed. But we've recovered, I've identified 8 of the bodies so far, the human remains. And the only one we're missing is the captain, Lieutenant Dixon, because we haven't gone into the forward compartment. And to answer your other question, yes, after the analysis, probably sometime in 2002, we're going to have a full military burial of the third crew of the Hunley alongside the first two crews. 13
Fantastic.
Men have already perished in the same submarine.
Warren, it sounds like you mentioned the textiles. You were hoping to get a jacket out of this?
Well, we've recovered one of the uniforms. It was a sailor's uniform made out of canvas, and we've got 50% of it. But... We were because of the sedimentation and the environment on the sub, we were expecting a high degree of artifact recovery, and that's exactly what we're receiving.
Was this volunteer duty for those guys back in those days, or were you ordered to get on there and be a submarine guy?
No, this was a volunteer duty. As a matter of fact, the Hunley was a secret weapon, so there was not much published in the papers, and there's not much literature about it. Until after the war, and still it's very sketchy, and we're finding today most of it's inaccurate. But they never had, one of the articles at the time said that we never had problems recruiting volunteers to man the Hunley.
I don't think you would. I mean, here's the options. You can either go underwater in a submarine where they can't get to you, or you can pull up side by side one of them boats and shoot cannonballs at each other.
That's what they used to do. They used to just sit there and shoot at each other till one of them sank, right?
That was warfare at the time.
Ain't a lot of trickery involved.
Man, and then in the fields, they used to march up, stand in line, and start shooting until there was only a few people left.
Correct. Jeez.
I never understood that. Why don't you lay down on the ground after you shoot? Just a thought. I mean, you know.
Did you see the movie Patriot?
Yeah.
And you just stand there and you go, how dumb was this?
Code of war, Bob.
No, it's unbelievable.
Well, that was warfare at the time. As a matter of fact, one of the... on the recent National Geo documentary, one of the comments about submarine warfare at the time was not considered gentlemanly or chivalrous to have a submarine because the usual codes of engagement was like, you know, the old time dueling. You just like you said, you stand in front of one another and you just fire bullets, and right. who's ever the luckier, better shot wins.
It's a good thing I live now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I would be branded a coward, and I would say, okay, thank you.
Color me a scoundrel and send me home to mama.
Speaking of color, what was the ethnic makeup on the subs? Spike had mentioned whether or not they were volunteers. If they were volunteers, then maybe I was thinking otherwise. They, you know, back in that day, they might have, you know, sent mostly guys of color down in the sub.
With the remains and with the hair and other features, and the, especially DNA analysis, is going to help us identify the,
you don't know
help
yet.
With the ethnicity. However, we do know...
Ethnicity, that's a George Bush word.
Ethnicity, hey. Nice.
The South was an agrarian society and did not have that many sailors or marine types at that time. And consequently, a lot of the naval and the mariner skills were Irish immigrants that had emigrated to New Orleans and Mobile, Alabama.
Mercenaries.
And we, well, not mercenaries to an extent. Some of them have volunteered. And we know for a fact there were several people of Irish descent on board the Humley.
But there were no...
So people. They were drinking.
I would be.
I would have been drinking.
You know, that's
absolutely.
Really one of the bottles, one of the first artifacts that we found was a bottle of European manufacture, and it was used at the time to either store flavorings or alcohol. So my question is always, what flavor do you think they had aboard the vessel?
Flavor alcohol.
Well, that would be what the guy would say to his wife. I'm bringing some flavorings with me.
Yeah. Like some gin flavor or some vodka flavor.
Right.
In all sincerity, it was February 17th, 1864. The water was cold. It was cold outside, and it was cold inside the vessel. So we're almost certain you had to have some kind of a grog or something to keep you warm.
All right. Now, what kind of a guy are you? I mean, Warren, you sound like this sub is your life. This is, like, fascinating. Do you also have a day job?
Yes, I do have. I happen to be a very fortunate. I'm an entrepreneur, and I've been very fortunate in my business career.
Uh-huh.
And when Senator McConnell asked me to become chairman of the Friends of the Humley 4 years ago, he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Warren, I'd like to offer you the chairmanship of the Friends of the Humley." And I said, "Glenn, that's really an honor and a privilege, but I only have about 10 hours every other week to devote to it because I'm still involved in my businesses." And he very sincerely said, "Warren, that's more than enough time." Well, it's been 50, he meant getting 10 hours off every other week. This has been my full-time job, basically, for the last 4 years, and it's just been a labor of love. And as every day goes by, I've gained a more abiding appreciation and respect for the crew.
Right.
Because I've looked in the mirror, and I said, if I was living back then, and somebody asked me to do that, you know, you can really say, you can say, yeah, sure I would. But if you want to look at yourself in the mirror and be truthful, I couldn't do it.
You must be a heck of a guy because you're about as Yankee as they come, and these Southern guys have put you in charge of this thing. That's quite an honor, actually.
Well, it really is. It's an honor and a privilege. But you know, the story of the Humley isn't North South states' rights, secession, slavery, or anything like that. The story of the Humley's the courage, honor, bravery, call to duty exhibited by these men. And that's the lessons we want to teach for generations. And you'll never find a better example of that than the Humley.
Warren Lash, Charleston, South Carolina. Warren, when you are all done, are you going to, you know, set the thing up in a museum somewhere? And
the conservation, it was under the ocean, obviously, for 137 years, and it's taken in a lot of salt. So it's going to take us about 7 to 8 years, plus or minus a year, to remove all those salts.
Eventually.
We should finish with the excavation of the vessel within the next 30 to 60 days. Then it goes into long-term conservation, and then it's going to remain in South Carolina in perpetuity. We just have to decide where it's going to be placed.
Good luck with it. Thank you. Bravery. Some would say foolhardiness. I would say...
It's a good reason to get drunk.
A little bit of both. Definitely the third thing. Tiny little submarines, hand-pedaled, by the way. They were back then.
Like a bicycle would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really crazy
stuff.
How
they turn the props on those things.
And if you were a ship, imagine your surprise if you didn't even know these things existed.
Twisted Tunes.
Hey, all you yuppies with millionaire dreams.
Your quick path to riches ain't what it once seemed. And accepted that soon you'll have nothing to eat. Cause your assets have been frozen. And you better start looking or you're out on the streets. The dot-coms, they are a-closing. You dot-com investors with all that new bread, there is nowhere to see that correction ahead. So don't spend it too soon, your portfolio's red. From the startup that you've chosen, you're millionaires now, but there's tough times ahead. The dot-coms, they are a-closing. It's been a long time since your stock's in the black. That new Porsche Turbo will have to go back. You best take that job folding shirts at the Gap. Then at least you'll have clothing. It's better than out on the street selling crack. The dot-coms, they are a-closing. Didn't we used to have a whole band out here? But then that drummer we had working with us took all his gear back. Damn. Hey, I need that microphone and a harmonica, at least a harmonica. Please.
I've actually witnessed the packing up of several dot-com companies. Not just one or two. Several. Friends of mine who were bragging about how many tens, and in one case even hundreds, of millions they would be worth someday. I've watched them carry the servers out to the repo truck.
Ouch. See, now, but guys like Mark Cuban have made billions.
Well, he sold at the right time.
This guy, Tito, in space, he's made billions.
$20 million to go on a space ride for fun. No, it's been a bloodbath for a lot of people, as it should be. There are certain things that do not deserve to survive. Companies that actually have no chance of ever making a profit. Well, that's one thing that doesn't deserve to survive. Another thing that doesn't deserve to survive that is a product of the new technology communications era is spam, unwanted email. When I was growing up, there used to be an occasional door-to-door salesman. Remember that, door-to-door salespeople?
Polar brush guy, World Book encyclopedias.
Vacuum cleaners, Mary Kay cosmetics.
Stuff you didn't really need, but on an impulse buy with the guy showing you how great it picks up the dirt, mm-hmm. you might just take it.
They've kind of gone away, haven't they? You don't really get door-to-door that
yeah,
much.
Well, we got one a couple years ago. But
you get a vacuum cleaner. Your wife spent like $3,000 for it.
On a vacuum cleaner before I came. It's true. Before I came home.
That was a sore spot.
You know what just happened last week? We found out if we don't buy the $500 filters for it, it voids the lifetime warranty.
No, of course.
Ooh. I swear to God.
Do you ever respond to spam?
You know, I don't. I've seen it every day. Every day.
I've actually clicked on something that looked interesting.
Squash the monkey, win $500, that kind of thing?
No. Then it turns out the site wasn't really free after all.
Oh.
Anyway, at a moment there. Let's go to the phone right now and speak with Ellen Spertus. Ellen was getting unwanted email from Cosmo.com. By the way, they're on our .com death watch, Ellen.
Uh-huh. They're so dead.
Are they completely dead?
They are completely dead.
She told Cosmo.com to quit the spam. They didn't. She sued and she won. Oh, but Ellen.
They're dead.
They're going out of business. You'll never get your money.
It certainly won't be delivered within an hour.
With ice cream and a video.
What a great answer. How much did you win?
I won $50 plus court costs of $27.50.
Ooh, landmark case.
$77.50.
That's something. And but it's
that's,
a more.
That's what broke him.
Yeah, it's a moral victory for you, right?
That's right. I wasn't in it for the money.
Ellen, where do you live?
I live in San Francisco, and I'm a college professor at Mills College.
Oh, how sweet. So you've also set an example for a bunch of students.
That's right.
About integrity and standing up for your rights and all those things.
Or at least not messing with me.
Not messing with you.
Oh, man. For $77, that's a bargain.
So, Ellen, you're a fairly stern professor, is that right?
No, I try to appear tough, but I'm really a softy.
What do you teach?
Computer science.
Oh, that's nice. So tell me the story that led to this. What sort of spam were you getting? Was Cosmo just, and did you somehow let Cosmo have your email address? Were you responsible?
Yes, I had been a Cosmo customer, but I opted out of marketing mailings. And then in November, I received an email from them saying that it was being sent specifically to people who had opted out because they thought we'd want to hear about this anyway. And that was just too much for me.
Uh-huh.
So I emailed privacy@cosmo.com to complain.
Mm-hmm.
The address was listed on their website, but that mail bounced.
There is no privacy at Cosmo.com. It's part of the cutbacks. By the way, for folks listening, let's give them a little glossary. There are two terms you need to know in regards to email. Opt-in means you signed up to be on it, correct?
Right.
And opt-out means that you ought to be able to anytime say, take this away, I don't want it.
Right. They acknowledged that I had opted not to receive mail, but they were sending that anyway.
Right. Because they felt that you didn't really know what you wanted.
I guess so.
Now, did you do this lawsuit yourself? Did you get an attorney?
I did it myself. I'd never sued anyone before. Oh. I joined the Sue Spammers mailing list to find out how you do this.
Uh-huh.
Washington State has actually been a leader in this. You have some of the toughest anti-spam laws.
Absolutely do, for sure.
And I filed, well, first I sent a registered letter to Cosmo saying I'd rather resolve this amicably, but I never heard back from them.
Don't make me take $77 from you.
And then I filed in small claims court. At the beginning of April, there was a hearing. In small claims court, you're not allowed to be represented by an attorney. I showed up. Someone from Cosmo showed up. They disputed the claim. They said it wasn't spam. It was a service announcement. And apparently the judge agreed with me.
And was that your full award, the $50? Is that all you were asking for, or did he cut that back some?
From a $3 million settlement.
I asked for $500, but I acknowledged there wasn't really a basis for it. And what I told my friends beforehand was I'd be happy to win $50 because I was just going for the principle of it.
Right.
I would have been out in one of those .coms instead of being a college professor if I'd been motivated by
slam,
money.
Slam, slam, slam.
Now, it's too bad you don't teach business or you'd really be enjoying this now, huh?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they'd say it's not worth it.
Right. Now, do your students aspire to get rich quick? Do you find some of them? And has this been a lesson for them?
No, they don't. When I was at MIT and University of Washington, there was more interest in making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But Mill students really want to make the world a better place and go into education or nonprofits or something with social value.
Very nice. And you're a good influence, Ellen. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ellen Spertus, she has sued and won $77.
$0.50.
Which she will never see. Right?
That's right.